Hello and welcome to the Crisis Point Podcast. I'm Eric Sammons, the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. And today we have a great guest with us. Today is Dr. Monica Miller. She is the founder of Citizens for a Pro-Life Society. She's the author of this very awesome book, Abandoned, the Untold Story of the Abortion Wars. Also some other books as well, which I'm forgetting. I didn't write them down. I should have. But anyway, she's written a number of good books. She has written for Crisis Magazine, and she's very involved with Pro-Life Activities Day, has been forever. I consider her, I asked my teenage kids, is okay if this term is still used, that you are one of the pro-life OGs, which is a term for those who have been involved since the beginning and kind of led the way for the rest of us. So anyway, yes, Monica has been involved with pro-life activism work. How long, what year did you get started? 1980s sometime, right?
1976.
Wow, you are really, really at the beginning. I mean, that's just only 3 years after Roe v. Wade.
That's right.
I mean, that's Joan Andrews. That's like really at the beginning.
I was only 23 years old.
Wow.
When I got involved in the pro-life movement. So I was young once.
Yeah, we all were, I guess. So.
Right. Only 23 years old. When I got started, I just graduated from Southern Illinois University with a degree in theater. So I have a degree in theater.
I wonder how many people with a degree in theater end up going into pro-life activism.
Well, I don't mind saying it has come in, it's been enormously handy. It really has been. I can talk about that a little bit.
Okay, yeah, sure. So today what we wanted to talk about a little bit was Monica recently wrote an article for Crisis called Risking Arrest to Defend the Unborn. And it was about really the history of the pro-life activist movement, the rescue movement. And just for those who aren't quite clear on what that term means, just real quick, rescue is a term that generally means somebody who does something traditionally to block access to abortion clinics so that women are not able to enter and kill their children. And Operation Rescue is the most famous group that was associated with it, but they're just one group of many. So anyway, rescue usually means somebody generally who risks arrest in order to stop abortions from being performed. And we can talk more about it in detail. Just before we start throwing out rescue, I want to make sure people who are watching or listening would understand that term. So Monica, how did you... You said you got involved back in 1976. Did you start off immediately doing things that would risk arrest? I know a few people were doing it back then, or is it more just sidewalk counseling and political activism or things like that?
Well, the way I got involved was actually, and I do talk about it in my book, Eric, but after I graduated from Southern Illinois University, I stayed on in Carbondale for about a good year. After that, trying to figure out what to do with myself. And I went on a retreat during Holy Week of that year. And I met a woman named Shirley Parks at the retreat. And she was involved in this thing called the pro-life movement. And it was the first time I'd actually ever heard that those words. And somehow I became very attracted to what she was doing. I piled around with her. She took me to meetings. She gave me good books to read. And so I was having my initiation into the injustice of abortion and the politics of it, learning about Roe versus Wade. I actually read a hard copy of Roe v. Wade, and it is heavily annotated, I don't mind saying, my original copy. But what happened fairly quickly is I decided to study theology at Loyola University in Chicago. So I went from theater to theology. I was just going through the THs, I guess. and I went to a meeting. I was invited to a meeting by another woman named Marcita Hecht, who was a parishioner at St. Ignatius Parish in Rogers Park, Chicago. She said, Monica, let's go to a pro-life meeting. And I said, sure, why not? So we got on the L train and we beat it down to the loop and we went to the offices of the Illinois Right to Life Committee. And that group, it was at that time headed up by Joseph Scheidler.
The late, great Joseph
Scheibler.
The late,
Scheibler. Absolutely great Joe Scheibler. He died January 18th, not even just a couple months ago. Well, as it turns out, the meeting, and this would have been in February of 1978, was to plan a sit-in. And when it time came for, okay, who's willing to risk arrest? I just automatically raised my
hand. Why not, right?
Right. I just was totally, this was the right thing to do. And babies needed to be defended. And we were going to put our bodies in a nonviolent way, of course, between the abortionist and the baby. And I was only at that point, I was only 24 years old. So my first sit-in, we hadn't even adopted the biblical language yet. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the anniversary of that is March 11th.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, March 11th.
I know.
Well, yeah. And that it would, because it took place March 11th, 1978. And I had not yet reached my 25th birthday. So I was 24 years old. And I always believed from that time, Eric, that the unborn deserved a real viable, practical defense. And at the same time, it was important to do it, to defend the unborn in an act of love, as we also try to be a witness to the mothers, where literally it, right there in the waiting room, ready to get their abortions. That particular sit-in, that first one, we actually did in the waiting room. We went in the clinic. But in the early days of rescue, most of the rescues took place outside and blocked the entrance, the doorway to the abortion clinic. And I participated in a lot of those rescues from 1978 all the way through the mid-1990s. I organized them, I promoted them, participated in them, and I went to court a lot of court experience, and spent a number of months in jail as well. Now, here's the thing, in terms of the history, the pro-life sit-in movement can be dated from the mid-1970s. And I believe the first one actually may have taken place in Virginia or Washington, D.C. area with Brent Bozell, memory. And
in St. Louis, weren't there early ones?
And there was a lot of activity in St. Louis and in Philadelphia in particular. John Cavanaugh O'Keefe was a very early rescue leader. Wrote a lot of apologetics for why this particular activity is necessary for the pro-life movement. So from about the mid-1970s into the mid-1980s, the pro-life sit-in movement was a fairly fledgling operation. It was scattered here and there. And maybe we could count perhaps hundreds, but no more than that. In any particular, you know, demographic here in the United States. But that, what happened then in the mid-1980s was the founding of Operation Rescue. And at that point, the rescue movement adopted the biblical language coming off of Proverbs 24:11, rescue those who are being dragged to death, and to those tottering to execution, withdraw not. And so rescuers, pro-lifers felt that as a real mandate, God's own word needed to be put into practice. And here we have a whole people group that are named non-persons who are literally being led off to their slaughter with the sanction of law. So with the development and the founding of Operation Rescue, a lot of credit there goes to Randall Terry in the late mid to, well, the big Operation Rescue actually happened in kind of a, shall I say, the inauguration events took place in May of 1988 in New York City. And I participated in those rescues. hundreds of people were participating. I mean, we had people piled up in front of the door to New York City abortion clinics in the hundreds. It was enormously effective. We were shutting these clinics down all day. The media attention was incredible. And so from about 1988 into the early 1990s, the rescue movement was really up and running. That actually, and people just don't remember this, but literally tens of thousands of pro-lifers were now participating. And it was and one very important feature of this development was the enormous ecumenical development between Protestants and Catholics doing things together, who otherwise would probably not associate with each other. At that time, Randall Terry was an evangelical Christian. Now he converted to the Catholic faith, but it was a very Protestant-driven movement. When we talk about the growth of Operation Rescue, it was amazing, and people were going to jail and serving jail terms, and we continue to do our rescues mostly in Chicago and in Milwaukee. Right. Yeah, I went to Milwaukee in 1985 to begin my work towards my PhD, my doctorate at Marquette. Okay. And so that's where I started to do a lot of rescues, and actually wound up doing a jail term for 7 months. In 1993, because of one of the rescues I did.
Yeah, so, boy, a lot there. One thing, wasn't the early rescue movement, like from the mid-70s to mid-80s, predominantly Catholic, and it was then when Randy came on, and really he, along with some others, brought the evangelicals in, that it really took off? Isn't that basically?
That would be absolutely correct. Okay. The early rescue movement was basically a Catholic affair.
Right.
That was.
And then it just got, I mean, it took off. Because I remember, it was funny because two of the people you mentioned, I remember reading John Cabin O'Keefe and listening to Randall Terry. And that's what got me, and I was evangelical Protestant at the time. That's what got me involved in rescue in the pro-life
movement. Sorry, I got a phone ringing, but we'll ignore it.
Okay. And then I eventually became Catholic as well, through pro-life activist work. But it's amazing that was such, I mean, that's almost, we still talk about, rightly so, the civil rights movement of the 60s and what a big deal it was. But there were thousands and tens of thousands. I mean, I remember one summer alone, what summer was Wichita, was that 1991, I think, where there was thousands of people being arrested in just one summer in one location.
Yes, in particular, the Summer of Mercy.
Right.
That would have been 1991.
Okay, right.
And in 1992, there was a rescue in Milwaukee. Literally 500 people were arrested at an abortion clinic in Milwaukee. And that would have been June of 1992. So that tells you how robust this movement was. And I do actually talk about that rescue in my book. I was not able to participate in it because there was a warrant out for my arrest from the Attorney General of Wisconsin. So I was pregnant.
Right.
And I said, I'm going to get out of town for a while, because I need to be in charge of when I'm taken into custody. I did not want to have it be a surprise. You know, maybe there might've been a directional signal, out on my car and you get pulled over. I didn't want anything. I needed to be in charge of when I was going to be going into custody.
Right.
So I was not able to participate in that amazing rescue. And again, the tons of media coverage, we're talking front page, above the fold headlines. That's how robust and important and conspicuous the rescue movement was. You know, all the way from the mid 1980s into the mid 1990s. something unfortunately happened that I would have to say virtually the whole movement was shut down almost overnight.
Right. Yeah, it was the most effective piece of legislation probably in the history of America as far as accomplishing what its goal was.
Set out to do, right? We're talking about the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act, which was signed into law on May 20th, 1994. And next to Roe v. Wade is the law I hate the most.
Yeah.
And I try to provide, Eric, in the article that I wrote for Crisis, some explanation. How could this be? And it's a very complex answer. And I wasn't really able to explain all the facets of why the rescue movement essentially came to a halt within a matter of months. But now you have to, there's a certain psychology that's involved. And the psychology is that for decades, you know, we're doing rescues and blocking the doors to abortion clinics to defend the unborn. And what would you get in terms of a penalty? You're facing maybe a mere city ticket. You're facing maybe a state misdemeanor charge with a maximum 90-day jail term attached to it. Now you could potentially become a felon if you break the FACE. Okay, that's the acronym. If you break that law. And then there's also the civil component. The abortion clinic can come and sue you civilly. And I think it's sad to say, and again, there's a lot of factors that maybe I don't even completely understand, but the rescue movement was not up to facing it, no pun intended. but we weren't.
Yeah.
And I think here's another component that I think has to be factored in, and I can say this from my own personal life experience. Right around the time that the FACE law was enacted by Congress, a lot of rescue leaders were getting married, mm-hmm. starting to have children, like myself. And in fact, in that 1993 7-month-long jail term that I served, I already had a 17-month-old daughter and a 4-month-old son. There's no way that I was going to be continuing my rescue activity while I have a new responsibility. And so now, and you know, motherhood and fatherhood is something that takes a lot of time and a lot of focus and a lot of energy, and it goes on for years. And in the meantime, there were no new leaders coming up. They just did not take the reins and do what needed to be done to continue the rescue movement. So I think that kind of pretty much brings us up to almost the present moment, because from 1990, some rescues were still going on here and there. Right. Okay. But virtually that, you know, I don't think there was a rescue for literally decades. 1994 into this century, we didn't see any real rescue activity. It really, really had gone by the wayside. And not only did it go by the wayside, but Eric, the memory of it,
yes,
went by the wayside. There are people, you know, the majority of those active in the pro-life movement, especially the young pro-lifers that we have, they just don't have no memory. I've given talks, this is how shocking it can be. I've given talks on my book, and I'll mention Joe Scheidler or Joan Andrews Bell or John Kavanaugh O'Keefe, and the audience doesn't even know who they are.
I mean, those are literal American heroes in my mind. I mean, yeah. They've done more to save more babies. And they've sacrificed so much. I mean, yeah, we have to know who those people are.
This is our history, and these are, we're standing on the shoulders of these people, and so the memory of rescue went away. And here's the thing: that again, I think it is a sad development, but the pro-life movement learned to live without the rescue movement. And a lot of beautiful initiatives, in a sense, took its place. 40 Days for Life, for example, in a sense, took its place.
Right.
There were in the increase in the crisis pregnancy centers that we see, the sidewalk counseling activity, the politics, even just the state politics, that's, you know, right as we're talking, we have states that are banning abortion, Alabama, South Dakota.
Praise God.
And so on. So all of those initiatives are incredible. And what a blessing. But we learned to live. We did. We learned to live without the rescue movement. Here's the thing, though. I never let go in my own spiritual commitment to the doing of rescues. I always still felt, even though with my motherhood responsibilities and so on, and anyway, I went on and got a PhD, and I've been teaching at universities, and I wrote a bunch of books, you know, did a whole ton of other kinds of activism. I mean, really hardcore activism, burying the dead, burying a dead unborn babies, getting them out of the trash, and the protest PP demonstrations that I do with the Pro-Life Action League. I mean, I've done a ton of pro-life activism, but in, you know, always sitting there in my spiritual repertoire was rescue should still be done. I never let go of it. And here's what happened about it'll be 4 years this April, 2021, that I got an email from Christopher Bell. And Christopher Bell is Joan Andrews Bell's husband, and he runs the Good Counsel homes for expectant mothers in New Jersey. And he said, Monica, why don't we have a discussion about whether it's possible to raise up a rescue movement again. And this email was circulated among a few other pro-life activists, rescue leaders, like in particular, John Ryan, who was very active in doing rescues in St. Louis.
Right.
So we decided to have a meeting. And we had that meeting in April of 2017. And it was in St. Louis. And I was there, and Lynn Mills was there, John Kavanaugh O'Keefe was there, Randall Terry was there, Joseph Scheidler was there, Joan Andrews Bell was there. So this was getting Everybody. The old gang back together.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's right.
Okay.
With a few more gray hairs, but still the same in Corby.
Right. And there were a few newbies, you know, in that meeting. We had about maybe 15 people there. Will Goodman, who was involved with the Collegians Activated to Liberate Life, he was at the meeting and so on.
Great guy.
Jonathan Darnell from Washington, D.C. was there as well. Oh, and who else was there? Jack Ames. Jack Ames.
Oh, yeah. Jack Ames. Yep, I remember him.
In Baltimore, he was there. So the canuppance of our meeting was, yes, we want to do something to raise up the rescue movement, and we thought we should try something different. And actually, I had this idea brewing in my mind for literally a decade, and my thought was, why don't we go in the abortion clinic, let's go in to the waiting room and talk to the moms, you know, let's have more of a one-on-one engagement with the moms. I don't want to just protest abortion, block a door and get arrested, which of course I'm all in favor of that. But I want, if we don't reach the mom, have we really succeeded? Okay. I mean, the mother is the, you know, where the buck stops, so to speak, right? So, and then we knew that there was a pro-lifer in Canada, Mary Wagner, who had been doing these one woman rescues for years. And she would go into these Canadian, mostly in Toronto, the abortion clinics in Toronto. And she'd go in with roses, you know, a sign of life, a sign of peace, and offer those roses to the moms in the waiting room. And we just thought we should be doing the same thing here. We'll go into the waiting room and we'll bring roses with us. We'll try to talk to the moms. And so we had a second meeting to plan our strategy in June of 2017, and that was in Chicago. And it was at that meeting that we decided to call ourselves Red Rose Rescue. And so as I explained in my article for Crisis Magazine, the Red Rose Rescue does do something different. We don't block anything. If somebody wants to block a door to the clinic, more power to you. But we don't, which in is actually kind of a smart move, because that doesn't make us liable to a face charge.
Right.
And the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act is about blocking ingress and egress to a woman wanting to exercise her reproductive rights, but we don't do that. And we have felt that it really isn't necessary, ultimately, to block anything or to chain ourselves to something. We have found that as long as there's an actual pro-life, visible, maybe even audio presence in the abortion clinic, the abortions are halted. And part of what we do in a Red Rose Rescue is we will not leave. Women are going to go down the hall, the ones who don't listen to us, go get their abortions. We will stay with the unborn. We're not going to leave them. Somebody needs to stay with them. And I think that we're really just trying to put into practice certain basic Christian principles. First of all, that if my life was threatened, I would want someone to come into the danger zone and offer an act of defense on my behalf, at least stand between me and the assailant, at least do that, witness to my humanity with an actual act of defense. So do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And the unborn need us. When a baby is scheduled for abortion, that is an abandoned human being who has no voice, has no way to protect him or herself. We're it. And you know, again, as I explained in the article, I could argue that what's going on in terms of activism right now. Certainly sidewalk counseling, I think, is the backbone of pro-life activism. But the killing is not happening on the street. It's within four walls, and the unborn babies are in there. And if the mom has not listened and not been open to the help that is provided to them from the sidewalk counselors, and she goes in to the abortion clinic, and let's just be honest, the vast majority of them go in.
Right.
Okay, I mean, just that's just the statistics. We go where the unborn are, where they are, and I do give that analogy from Mother Teresa. Saint Mother Teresa of Calcutta, and what did she want to do that was different from the Sisters of Loretto? Okay, because she was, initially she was a sister in a religious order that educated girls. Okay, but the Indians and whoever was going to be attending their schools or whatever, they had to come to them. And Mother Teresa, certainly in India, there's horrific poverty, people literally living on the street. And Mother Teresa wanted to go where they were, not wait for them to come to you, but you go to them. And I think that's the principle of the incarnation. the word became flesh and dwelt among us. And so that incarnational principle to go where the needy are living, to go where they are. And so Mother Teresa characterized her ministry as going to the dark holes of the poor, go to the dark holes of the poor. And that's what we want to do in a Red Rose Rescue. We want to go into the dark hole of abandonment, where the unborn are about to be executed, and be there with them. And so this is an act of witness. It is a practical act of defense for as long as we're there. And it does involve an element of arrest, because we refuse to leave. When the police come, we explain to them what we're doing. Now, some people who will participate with us, they have the option to leave if they want, okay? And we have had plenty of people who will participate in a Red Rose Rescue up to that point. But a Red Rose Rescue, we have to have at least a few people, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever it's gonna be, stay in the clinic and refuse to leave.
Now to play devil's advocate, why is that so important? Like, why not you go in, you talk to the moms, the mom decides to go ahead with the abortion, goes through, you can't stop them at that point without violating face and maybe other reasons, but eventually they're going to get have their child aborted. So why not at that point, just when the cops come and say, because I know they always give you a warning and you're free to leave at that point. Why not just leave? Like, what, I think a lot of people might say, what's the value of, you're just giving yourself jail time when you could just leave. I mean, why do that part?
Because I think the unborn deserve it. I think they deserve someone to stay with them for as long as we can, to abide with them and to be in solidarity with them. And so there's a very important dynamic that we have to be taken away. We can't just get up and leave.
And I think that's one of the things I remember from the rescue days and even now that people misunderstood about rescue is they looked at it primarily as a political demonstration. A lot of people misunderstood that. And I never thought it was a political, I mean, it might have political ramifications, I get that. But the reason you go there and potentially risk arrest, I mean, there really is only one reason, to stop an abortion from happening. I mean, that abortion. It's not to stop abortion in the country. It's not to change laws. Right. It's not even to change like the hearts of other people. It's simply to save potentially one single life even, or just a few lives that day in that one place. And I think that's fundamental to the whole point of rescue. So
I think the other dimension that I think is very important, and people might say, well, what a waste of time, but it really isn't, is, I mean, I could argue in a sense that the rescue doesn't end when you're arrested, handcuffed, and put in the police van. Your witness is continuing to the media, to the police officers, to the jail personnel, to the judge, to the jury, to all the people that show up in court, the pro-abortion people that come to court, the witnesses that take the witness stand, and so your witness continues well after, I do have some experience with what it means to be in jail as a pro-lifer. Your witness continues in jail, and people read my book. My jail experience was remarkable. I talked women out of abortions while I was in jail. I was a mentor to women who were, looking for spiritual guidance. I was a role model. In fact, I tell a little funny story in my book. When I was in jail in 1993. I wanted to move my bunk. I don't really remember the reason, but I wanted to move closer to whatever, and maybe I'd get away from the light. It was always, lights are on all the time.
All right.
So I settled in, the matron gave me, you know, permission to move. And so I move over to this other bunk, and the bunk mate, who was, she had the upper bunk and I had the lower bunk. And she, the first thing out of her mouth was, "Oh, thank God, a nice, quiet Christian." So it was, I looked at being in jail as my mission field, my ministering to, it was a remarkable experience.
And you're going to reach people that are not going to be reached otherwise in jail. I remember one time I was thrown, there were about, I think, six or eight of us men, we were thrown in this big drunk tank overnight. And there's probably about, by the time it was filled, it was like 50, 60 people in this, men in this room. And it was pretty rambunctious and stuff. But it was amazing because all these guys, I mean, who knows what these people had done who were in there for whatever. But I remember that, like, the way they treated the pro-lifers who were in there, once they found out, oh, you were in here for that reason. Oh, okay. And like, they just, there was like this all automatic respect, like, well, this guy may be crazy, but he really does back it up with his actions. I mean, he's willing to come in here with us in jail.
That is, thank you, Eric. That is exactly what my experience has been. My fellow inmates are horrified. What are you doing in here? They can't believe that I'm serving the same jail time as they are, you know, for drunk driving, assault and battery, prostitution, drug abuse, and whatever else is involved. The level of respect is incredible, and humbling. It's humbling, the way that there's a deference towards the pro-lifer in jail.
Now, so Red Rose Rescue then has been working for about 4 years now. I mean, obviously Mary Wagner for a long time before that, but, and just so people who are listening, a couple of these names to look up: Mary Wagner, she's Canadian, and just, she's another one of these heroes, but you have to look into, Joan Andrews Bell. Joan Andrews is her maiden name. And so some places it might be listed as that. But she has a couple of books written by her, about her, that are just inspirational. She spent, in the late 80s, she spent, was it 2.5 years, I think?
Right, 18 months in solitary confinement.
18 months, because she refused to cooperate with a system that essentially allowed unborn babies to be killed. And so that was her witness. And people would, there's no question, I'm sure people around her thought, there were some people around her who thought, what a waste, what a silly thing, you know, you're doing this for no reason. But yet she really was the inspiration of a lot of those people who went out to rescue. I mean, in the two people who influenced the thousands of people the most were Randall Terry, through his dynamic speaking and everything, and organizational work, and then Joan. I mean, because she just—
Yes, and Joan has participated now, I think, in two Red Rose Rescues.
She just, oh my gosh. I mean, and her life story is just amazing. I mean, there's a few people in my life where I've met them and I immediately thought, oh, this person's a saint. And that's only happened like 2 or 3 times. And she's one of them.
Yeah.
I mean, she just is, yeah, amazing. But so Red Rose Rescue, now you've been doing it for 4 years. You've done a number of them now. And like, how many, I know COVID stopped a little bit of the activity, but I know you're back at it. What are the plans for Red Rose Rescue that you can talk about? Like in the future, is it growing, or are there same?
Yes, I think it's growing. It's growing slowly. I'm actually going to be giving a speech March 18th at Franciscan University of Steubenville on Red Rose Rescue.
Awesome.
To promote, to recruit. And then I'm giving another speech at a Baptist church in Cleveland the very next day.
Great.
So a lot of what I've been doing now is promotion and recruitment. And I would even count this interview towards that, to help people understand and maybe even to prick consciences. Maybe this is something that, you know, your listeners, your viewers say, this is something I should get involved with. And here's the thing, Eric, the penalties are just not that big a deal. What are people ultimately afraid of? You go to jail for a week, you're going to have to maybe obey some probation rules. I mean, we don't pay fines. So there is, you know, unless someone has a personal reason why they have to avoid jail. I mean, we're not doctrinaire about it, but ideally we do not pay fines. We don't owe, and we do not do community service because we don't owe the community anything.
Right.
And we don't, you know, so we have some principles that we want to practice in terms of our witness. But I went to jail for a Red Rose rescue for 32 days. I was a guest of the Oakland County Hilton, and but it was okay. I know I'm just going to sound weird, but it was a good time. Again, I mentored my fellow inmates. I can be there for them. It helps you also to spiritually grow as a Christian to have that experience, to literally be, in some sense, literally be stripped down to the absolute bare essentials. It's amazing how, you know, in jail, you learn to live with very little. Okay. You have one blanket, you have one set of clothes. You have to learn how to get along with a whole lot of other people that, you know, can be, well, frankly, somewhat annoying. But you're going to be able to practice virtue as a Christian. And so it's 32 days. So is that life shattering? No.
It's like an Ignatian retreat.
Of a kind,
right.
But here's the other thing that I think people need to maybe ponder is abortion is an incredibly grave, hideous injustice that claims the lives of at least about 2,500 innocent human beings every day. And how do we expect this grave injustice to be overcome unless we're willing to make very serious sacrifices?
Right.
So that's how you have to look at it. Now, this is an opportunity to do great, great things. We shouldn't allow this opportunity to pass us by. And the instant friends that you make when you're involved in something like a Red Rose rescue, instant camaraderie. You know, to be able to stand in court and witness to the humanity of the unborn. And by the way, let me really bring people right up to the moment. So we actually have quite a few Red Rose Rescue trials pending, and COVID has postponed a bunch of them. And I'm still waiting to go on trial here in Michigan from a rescue we did almost a year ago. But one of our trials in, I think it's in New Jersey, the judge has permitted a defense of others on behalf of the women. So in other words, negative consequences to the mothers in abortion. And we actually have lined up an ex-abortionist who is ready to testify on behalf of the defendants. That's huge that we actually have that opportunity. The last Red Rose rescue just happened on the 30th of January, and that was in Silver Spring, Maryland. And a Hispanic woman left the clinic during the rescue saying, and you know, these are the magic words, "I'm keeping my baby." So we will count it as a save, all right, and to leave the clinic. So that's glorious. That's exactly what we want to happen. But there was a rescue last week in Mount Joliet, Tennessee. It was what we would call a traditional rescue.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't a Red Rose rescue. They blocked the doors. That group is a group of Protestant pro-lifers, Cal Zastro in particular. Chet Gallagher from way back when participated in it. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Some people might be familiar with his name. He's an ex-police officer, participated in it. That group also did a rescue in August of 2020 at a clinic here in Michigan. It was actually the same clinic where I did the first Red Rose rescue in September of 2017, the same clinic. They blocked the doors. They, unbelievable as this sounds, submitted a motion to the judge in Macomb County, Michigan, and they were granted that defense. Honestly, that has probably not happened in literally decades.
Right, right.
At defense of others, a defense of necessity on behalf of the unborn child, not just the mom.
Right.
So these are, you know, this is going to be very interesting to see, you know, how, you know, the outcomes of these trials. And those are great fruits. Those are great fruits, I think, that we can point to.
It continues to push that abortion is not acceptable, that we're never going away. It's never going to be something where it's just a normal thing in our society. I mean, one of the things I always recognize is just being at the clinic, is that alone is something, because it makes the neighbors know this isn't a normal building. This is, and the people driving by, this is not normal. This is like a concentration camp. We should treat it as such. And so we're going to be there. And I think Red Rose Rescue, particularly going in, is powerful for doing that. That the workers know this isn't like a normal job. You know, let's say there's the office manager who's not, maybe doesn't care that much. We want her to realize, no, what you're doing is wrong. You're participating in a grave evil. You need to leave and go, you know, go somewhere else. So, and of course, we've heard of people, you know, like Abby Johnson and others who were working in abortion clinics who have left. You know, a lot of former abortionists and everything. Let's wrap it up. But what I would like to do, first of all, how can people find out about Red Rose Rescue?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a great website. It's redroserescue.com.
And I'll put a link in the description for people.
That'd be great. Redroserescue.com. And there is a contact link there. And it's actually to my own personal email. So, hey guys, anybody want to participate or get involved at whatever level? There's lots of things that need to be done in a Red Rose Rescue. Email me. All right. I listened to the podcast with Eric Sammons. Okay. Well, how can I get involved? I'd love to hear from your viewers. So
that would be great.
Go to the website, and there's a couple of videos there as well on the website, articles to read about Red Rose Rescue. So it's a good website.
And I had to bring this up again, because you said something about the people who are involved. In my experience, it's been almost 30 years since I was, you know, for any of us, we're doing rescue, and my deepest relationships and people that I feel the closest to are people from that era, even ones I haven't even been in physical contact with in 30 years. It's just because when you go through that, it's an intense experience, and you realize, okay, first of all, these people have your back. I mean, they're willing to get arrested for an unseen baby. They're going to also support you. If something, you know, like you said, you're not being doctrinaire about what people do. If somebody has to do something, we support each other and we help each other out. So go to redroserescue.com. Also, I'll post a link to the article we've been talking about that was at Crisis Magazine. Also, buy this book, Abandoned. I think I said this before we went on air, but my wife bought, just who was very involved in rescue as well, and she was arrested a number of times. She bought like just, I don't know how many copies, and just kept handing them out to people over and over again, because it's a history that most people want to shove under the rug. They don't want to acknowledge, but I think it's very important for the pro-life. If you're involved with pro-life work, I really think you should get this book, because it tells a history of where we've come from. And only by knowing that can we really move forward. So definitely buy it.
Yeah, it's St. Benedict Press, a division of Tan Books.
Okay, great. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Monica, for being on the show. I appreciate it. And for all those who are listening or watching, please subscribe to the podcast, Crisis Point, and YouTube or podcast, wherever you are listening or hearing this or watching this. Also, like I said, I have links to Red Rose Rescue and Monica's article. So thank you very much. And God bless you, Monica. And see everybody next time.
Thank you, Eric.